Welcome to the Blue Milk Special Podcast, Episode 3 for Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. In this episode, we discuss our personal Star Wars origin stories and why Star Wars has remained a pop culture phenomenon. You're listening to Rod Hanna,
Leanne Hanna,
and Kevin Kahn.
Welcome to Blue Milk Special, the podcast, episode 3. Been up to anything interesting?
Oh, you know, the normal bounty hunter stuff.
Bounty hunters? We don't need that scum.
Yes, sir.
Not much. Busy weekend. Got to see the girlfriend on Sunday, and then Saturday I went to Philadelphia to see our mutual friend John Hoche in Warhorse, the play, and highly recommend it's a tour of the play Warhorse. Check your local theaters. See this play. It is a beautiful play. That's about it, really. Not too much.
So, Leanne, you were working on some Star Wars artwork this weekend for the webcomic.
Well, we were going over the Vader versus Luke battle from Empire Strikes Back, and we were looking at some of the different poses and working out some different strips and things, and I think we added a few new strips to what we had. So it was just preparation, and we watched part of the fight, which was cool.
I was inspired because I've been buying up some Star Wars action figures lately, mostly obscure background characters, which Return of the Jedi and A New Hope are really good for. But it's inspired me, so I wrote some more scripts specifically for Return of the Jedi. And the annoying thing is that we're still so many months away from that point that I'm really anxious to bring these ideas to life, but I've got this long wait.
Yeah.
I accept Empire Strikes Back as the best movie of the three. And yet, I've got way more ideas for A New Hope and Return of the Jedi in terms of parody than I do for Empire.
I think that's... I mean, again, though, it's probably because Empire is the smoothest of the bunch. If this was an alcohol beverage, it'd be Cole 45.
Yeah, it seems more linear than the other movies.
Yeah.
And maybe because... Maybe the darker tone makes it more difficult to stray off on tangents. In A New Hope, you have, like, the whole world of Tatooine. And I really want to go back and fill in a lot of the characters we skipped from the cantina. In Empire, you really just have the Rebel base and Cloud City.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, though. I mean, I think our parody's working really well for Empire. I think we've touched on a lot of really good ideas, but I'm just not as tempted to pick out an obscure character and develop it so much.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, with the cantina and even with Tarkin and the background characters in the first movie, there was a lot of stuff to play with. I don't, for some reason, it inspires me more.
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Lucasfilm has confirmed the new theatrical release dates for the upcoming 3D versions of the next two films in the Star Wars prequel trilogy. Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, will release for a limited time only in U.S. theaters on September 20th, 2013, followed shortly by Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith, on October 4th, 2013.
Yeah, I'll be skipping the 3D releases. I appreciate what 3D is, but I wear glasses, and the only way to wear 3D glasses is over the top of my glasses. It's like looking through a periscope at a movie screen. It's just not fun.
You nerd.
Okay. Hey, for anyone who enjoys the prequel trilogy and wants to see Jar Jar Binks coming at them in 3D...
Lisa Ferrari! My name is Jar Jar Binks. Why didn't anybody like me? Gee, I don't know.
That's true. You got to sit through him again if you go see them. So, And it might be a 28 frames per second thing, but with Tron Legacy, I thought there was a lot of blurring during the panning shots. It just didn't seem that special of an experience to me. I enjoyed the movie, you know, really enjoyed the movie, but would have probably been happy had I not had two layers of glasses in front of my eyes or the strobing effect.
I saw Tron in Legacy in 3D, and I'm not a nerd like you with two pairs of glasses on, nerd, but I too witnessed the blurry effect, so don't think it was like your glasses that did that. It really, and again, I own that now, and it's totally cool and even better to watch it in regular 2D.
Yeah, and I mean, I can understand a theme park ride in 3D. Sure. They're usually not 2 hours long.
Wouldn't that be amazing if it was accidentally a two-hour 3D ride? Like there's a glitch, and they're like, we can't get him out, sir. 13 people die in Star Wars 3D two-hour ride. All right.
Die from seeing Jar Jar in 3D.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
That's lethal.
I just want to say that I do not like 3D movies either. I think it's rubbish, and I think it's a passing fad, and I hate that it's lasted as long as it has. It's not necessary to enjoy a movie.
Some people might say that you're, you know, like a stick in the mud.
Well, I don't care. I don't want to have to pay more money to see them because it's, I mean, it costs more anyway. Movie tickets are expensive enough as it is. You don't need to add that stuff on top of it.
I totally agree. However, the film Stick in the Mud in 3D was pretty amazing. Yeah, I like the whole Hobbit thing now. I'm like, I'm going to just see it in 2D. I don't need to see it in 3D.
Have you heard about the people's, not everybody saying this, but a lot of people that saw the premiere complaining about motion sickness and things, because it's not just the 3D that you're getting with the Hobbit.
Yeah.
You're getting the 48 frames per second. So it looks, everything's in a lot more clarity, and to the point where you can actually see bad special effects, apparently. But some people are just really disorientated by it, and Leanne gets motion sickness. So, I mean, I have to wear another pair of glasses over mine. So there's a lot of people that just can't see them anyway, but I do go to see a movie for the story and the characters, and 3D really has nothing to do with enhancing the story or the characters. It's more of an adventure thing for an action film. And, yeah, I guess that's what the Star Wars movies are. They're action adventure films, but they're much more than just that, and we can touch on that a little bit later.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I do want to just mention, though, to be fair, about The Hobbit is that, people have been complaining, but what reports haven't been saying is that those people that were complaining and telling people that they shouldn't see The Hobbit were actually orcs.
Oh.
So, well played, Sauron.
Vulture.com continues to promote the Matthew Vaughn director rumor. In an interview posted on November 30th, Disney chief Alan Horn said we could expect an announcement of a director for Star Wars 7 soon. Horn was quoted as saying, "I would say you'll know soon, and it's got to come from Kathy Kennedy. We don't have the company yet," referring to the signed but not yet completed purchase by Disney. Horn assured fans that Disney has the franchise's best interests at heart. "We take very seriously the obligation to make a very good movie. Kathy is a very experienced producer. George Lucas is the godfather of that franchise and very, very involved on a consulting basis, so we feel very confident."
Okay, that's good to hear. And just a note there, the Fed have approved the sale of Lucasfilm to Disney, so it's only a matter of time now until Disney officially has full control of Lucasfilm.
Browsers.
Well, what do we think about this director rumor? Do you think that there's any truth to it?
Well, you know, certain places are going to be pushing their rumor. I think Vulture.com are the people that pushed Matthew Vaughn, put him out there in the first place. But then George Lucas made American Graffiti right before Star Wars, so it's hard to judge what somebody's capable of doing. And from what Kevin said, it sounds like he'd do a decent job, maybe. So I'm not too worried about him as a director.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good choice. I also think, somebody was talking about this earlier, a friend of mine, Russ, who runs comicbook.com, about how nowadays with the internet, it seems that these rumors are just thrown out there and said so many times, and that, you know, websites stick with certain ones, so that in the off chance that when it does happen to turn out to be true, then the website can be all saying, "Ooh, we were the ones to scoop it," you know, mm-hmm. the exclusive, and but yet at the same time, it's just like you just have so many rumors out there about anything, but especially when it's huge, like say Star Wars. I like his work, you know. I would be curious to see his take on it. You know, a lot of people know him from his more current films of X-Men and Kick-Ass, but you know, he did a film called Stardust, which is fairy tale, action adventure, romance based, you know, story. So I think he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Rothman has returned to take on the role of franchise manager of Lucasfilm. Rothman, having been a part of the company since the theatrical release of Empire Strikes Back, was largely responsible for launch of the modern expanded universe by supporting the publishing of Heir to the Empire.
Secret mission? What plans? What are you talking about?
Prequel producer Rick McCallum has left Lucasfilm to pursue an indie filmmaking career. For the last couple of years, talk about a live-action Star Wars television series has largely come from McCallum. His close association with the project cast further doubt over the Star Wars series coming to fruition.
Just want to add there, TheForce.net speculates that the upcoming video game, Star Wars 1313, has taken the live-action series' place as a more economically practical way to realize the show's ambitious focus on the Star Wars underworld. So Star Wars, the live-action series, sounds like it's dead for now. Though I wouldn't dismiss a live-action series in the future, given Disney's ownership of the ABC network and the desire to maximize their returns on their Lucasfilm investment. Next month, we'll see the release of Timothy Zahn's Scoundrels, starring Han Solo, Chewbacca, and Lando Calrissian. However, Zahn has written a 65-page prequel that will be published on December 10th called Win or Lose All. In this thrilling prequel ebook novella, Win or Lose All, Lando and a pair of unlikely allies find themselves involved in a dangerous game. And now, an exclusive excerpt, courtesy of Del Rey and Jedi News.
It was Lando, all right. He was weaving his way upstream through the crowd, a blue data card in his hand, and an intent but satisfied expression on his face.
Read more, Papa.
Timothy Zahn, man. That's like gold, that sentence. I just read about that today, and I thought it would be funny to quote one boring sentence from the excerpt.
The Death Star plans are not in the main computer.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
We intercepted no transmissions. This is a consular ship. We're on a diplomatic mission.
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
So, I was living in the UK, and I just turned 4 years old when I first saw Star Wars. It's a little embarrassing, but I know that because I still remember watching the scene where Vader strangles Captain Antilles while I was sitting on my potty with a wool blanket wrapped around me. And by coincidence, the blanket was black, but I don't think I was impersonating Vader. This was the first time I'd actually seen him, as far as I know. Plus, the blanket had a red and green diamond pattern that ran through it, so it would have been more of a Darth Christmas cloak, if anything. But yeah, I was on my potty, doing what you do, while I watched that scene, so I guess you could say it scared the crap out of me. In fact, to this day, that's the only way I could watch Star Wars. It makes it really difficult, of course, for Leanne to watch a film with me. Actually, I recently found out that Star Wars first aired in the UK on Sunday, October 24th, 1982, on ITV at 7:15 p.m. So apparently, that week's TV times had Darth Vader on the front cover, so I may have seen him and seen the cloak and been imitating him, but I like to think it was just simple modesty. Anyway, that's how I know exactly how old I was when I first saw it.
Yeah.
I don't really remember any other scenes from my first ever viewing, but not long after that we recorded another airing that was on television, and I wore out that tape rewatching it endlessly over the next few years. And I remember watching the Ewok movies, Caravan of Courage, Battle for Endor, the animated shows, the droids, and Ewoks.
We are the E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E cares from as far as go.
That was a horrendous opening theme. But I ate it up, always hoping there'd be some kind of Star Wars reference in the episodes. For when I say Star Wars, something from the movies as opposed to made up characters and just C-3PO and R2-D2. So Boba Fett shows up, woo! A stormtrooper shows up, or an Imperial officer shows up in the Ewok series. You know, that's the stuff I was living for. So, you know, I always wanted more. I was always waiting for there to be some new Star Wars thing. And when I say Star Wars, I wanted all the formula, you know, all the elements that made the movie so good, not just the Ewoks, not just C-3PO and R2-D2. I wanted to see what Luke Skywalker, Han and Leia, Chewie, the whole cast were getting up to, you know, the main cast, I should say. But yeah, I mean, there were tons of other shows I watched. I was big into G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man, all that kind of stuff. But Star Wars was one of those constants, which I'm still passionate about today, where the others have waned. Star Wars was always a place I wanted to escape into. And even when I was a teenager, when other interests, you know, vied for attention, and I always fell back to Star Wars every now and again, whether it was with the video games or the books. You know, I always wanted more.
Well, hopefully nobody thinks badly of me, but I actually never saw the Star Wars films properly, the original trilogy, until they were re-released in theaters, the special editions. Because up until that point, you know, my parents were never big on sci-fi and were never into, you know, that sort of thing. And I remember in the early 80s, A New Hope was on television, and it was a scene, one of the scenes in the Millennium Falcon, and they changed the channel because they thought it was boring. Mm-hmm. And then I remember seeing a clip from Empire Strikes Back of Han slashing open the Tauntaun and all the organs coming out. I don't know where I saw that, but when I finally watched Empire Strikes Back, I remember that scene. And then when I was in seventh grade in science class, it must have been like an early dismissal day because, you know, normally on the short days, you know, sometimes they'd let you watch a movie or, you know, you wouldn't have to actually, you know, do schoolwork as a treat. And I remember they started showing Return of the Jedi. And I watched a little bit of it, and then I lost interest because I didn't know. I knew that this wasn't the very first Star Wars movie, so I knew that I was completely lost in terms of the story. And so I didn't pay it much attention because I didn't think I'd be able to understand it. But, I mean, my cousins had the toys growing up, and I recognized, you know, some of the characters. If I saw a character, I knew it was from Star Wars. But in 97, my friend Jen and I went, because she was familiar with the movies, and, you know, she knew I would love them. So we went and watched all three as they came out. So that's how I first saw them. And I remember liking A New Hope. I thought it was good. But I didn't really get into it until I saw Empire, and I was just, like, blown away by it. And I liked Return of the Jedi as well. But after that point, because that's when they were doing the big promotion with some of the different food chains. And so I went and got, you know, the little toys and started collecting figures and, you know, drawing Star Wars characters. And that's just kind of where it snowballed. But it wasn't until, you know, I was about 17 when I finally saw the movies. And then I will say that because I knew that they were special editions and that they'd added a bunch of effects to them. So I actually took it upon myself to seek out the originals without, you know, the special effects, because I wanted to watch those.
Nice.
So.
Being that old, you were able to remember a lot about the experience. Because for me, yeah. I was so young. It's like, I really can't remember much more than the attack on the princess's ship at the beginning of A New Hope. You know, as far as my reaction to what I saw. So it's kind of cool that you were old enough to share it in such detail.
Yeah, but I think it also, it's kind of interesting because you first watched them when you were young. And, you know, I was older when I saw them. And we still have the same, you know, appreciation. I mean, it just kind of shows that it doesn't matter really how old you are. I think the movies still hold up really well. Anybody can watch them and enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since I'm older than all of you, sit down.
Oh,
Grandpa's
pish.
Got a tail to tail. I was 18 when driving, drinking soda pop and Star Wars. No, I don't remember Star Wars much. I vaguely, for some reason, do remember the Star Wars Holiday Special, but that's not my first memory.
No, you're not that much older.
Believe me. I was born in 75.
Yeah, I get 78. So that's still pretty young to remember the Holiday Special, but damn.
Well, my parents,
I guess you can't forget it, can you?
Empire. That's the memory that I'm going to start with, which was my dad, don't know how, but he got tickets to the Washington, D.C. premiere of Empire Strikes Back. And, like, nobody was there, but it was just like it was a premiere. And the only thing I remember, other than just, of course, being blown away, you know, five-ish years old, was at the movie. I also remember my dad giving me this, like, matchbox, but not matchbox, like, that scale, but it wasn't officially matchbox made. It was like a moving truck. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, I was like, this is another coolest moving truck I've ever seen. Because you're five, and everything is like, here, Billy, here's some pasta. Oh, my God! What the Chef Boyardee? This is the greatest thing I've ever had! Yeah, I remember Empire, and of course, just, you know, just instantly being sucked in and being blown away. And the other memories that come after and around that time, of course, is the toys. They sold them everywhere. I remember living in Illinois, going into grocery stores, and when you came into the grocery store, I'll never forget seeing a giant cardboard display of the new Empire Strikes Back action figures. And of course, you know, the toy aisle in a grocery store, them selling Star Wars, and then years later, G.I. Joe, He-Man, and so on. You know, so I mean, it was a great time to be a kid then, because it's just like, hey, we're going to the grocery store. Boring. Not then. That's where you could get, you know, you could get a new exciting action figure or whatnot. Yeah, I started young and was fairly a fan. It never went away. I mean, I was a sick kid. You know, when you get sick, is in like, you know, the flu or whatever in high school. I remember we just, you know, being home, and I just put in the trilogy on VHS and you know, watch them again and again and again. There are just so many memories. I mean, I could have my own segment, Kevin Kahn memories.
My experience is, you know, similar to yours. I actually, you know, was sick a lot as a kid, and when I was at home, I'd stick in a VHS tape, watch Star Wars. I mean, I'd watch, you know, as a kid, you rewatch everything for some reason. You know, every time it's like the first time. And I remember there were stories about some kid in America, I think, who'd seen Star Wars over 100 times. And at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, I've done that. In reality, when I really think about it, how many times did I watch it from start to finish, you know, and not just a bit here and there, you know? I'd be realistic about that. If you really think about it, maybe 20 to 30. I mean, that's a lot of times still for most mainstream people who've got a life or out playing sports or whatever. That sounds insane. But compared to what some fans would say, saying 20 or 30 times that you've seen one of the movies, you know, sounds kind of crazy. But once you got them on VHS, did you rewatch them a lot?
Yeah, I watched them a few times, I remember. And I also had, because I worked at a comic shop, well, it was like a comic book kiosk type thing in the mall when I was in high school, and we sold the VHS releases of the special editions, so I had those too. And then I had the originals. So, I mean, I watched both of them a few times, so.
I remember X-Wing, I remember TIE Fighter, the game, and man, I just loved that. And at that point, because the expanded universe was just starting to take off with the Thrawn trilogy and all the books, and now Dark Horse was making these comics, for a few years in the 90s, there was a bit of a resurgence for me. And then the special editions came out, which I was excited about. I'd never seen any of the movies in the theater. I'd only seen them all on television. So I was really excited about that. I wasn't thrilled with Jabba the Hutt's inclusion in the first film because I didn't think it looked very good. And I could see why I thought it was cut mostly because it didn't need to be there. But it was cut because Lucas didn't have the resources at the time to get what he wanted. He always had the intention of putting this slug-like Jabba character in there through stop motion or something. Overall, I really enjoyed watching the special editions. I think I started to become aware of unnecessary inclusion, so... I saw Phantom Menace twice. I took my dad the second time, kind of in denial. I mean, I love the Obi-Wan versus Darth Maul fight, but there wasn't really that much else I really liked about Phantom Menace other than that. And when I got the VHS tape the following Christmas, I never even watched the tape fully. I just fast-forwarded all the way, because back then in the day, you couldn't use a DVD to skip to the chapter you wanted to go to. You had to fast-forward and press play and hope it was in the right spot. The only thing I did with that video was put the Phantom Menace in, watch the fight at the end, and I just wasn't interested in rewatching the film.
That was the exact same thing with me, because I saw Phantom Menace probably two or three times in the theater, and I was in denial too. And I remember it just dragged throughout the whole thing until I looked forward to the fight scene at the end. And my parents got me the DVD for Christmas, and I opened it and watched it once, and I fast-forwarded all the way to the end and watched the fight.
What about yourself, Kevin?
Oh,
I know you've got a good story.
You all are not going to want me to be back on this show. I saw The Phantom Menace in North Kakalaki, North Carolina. It took me I'm going to tell you the number, but it was actually it definitely started wearing before I reached this point, but still... I saw The Phantom Menace 10 times.
Shut up!
In the theater. Yeah. And it wasn't until around 8 where I'm watching it going, hey, this is a piece of shit. Why am I... Sorry for cursing. Why am I watching 10 times? Like, the drug was fully injected into me. I was, fully, oh, it's John Williams. It's a long time ago. Lightsabers! Wipes! I was getting excited over wipes. That was a different wipe than before. Oh, Lucas, I have missed you and your wipes. Lucas wipe. Pulled in the bathroom aisle. Yeah, it was pretty bad. Now you can judge and everyone can make fun of me for that. Then, yeah, the video came out. I'm like, hey, yeah, I bought the video. And you will sit on my shelf, never to be watched, just to go, yep, there it is. And then episode 2 came out, and I saw that one time. And episode 3 came out, and I saw it for free, and I still hated it. But Phantom Menace, I don't know what it was. I mean, because that's what I'm saying, is you're an 80s kid. You've got He-Man, Star Wars, G.I. Joe, Transformers. That's the core. You know what I mean? That's it. And being a big, fat nerd all my life, that's what I had. I was with Star Wars all the way, buying figures, Power of the Force, Kenner figures at KB Toys for 50 cents because they were on clearance because nobody wanted them. I was that guy buying them as a kid going, I still love Star Wars. Yeah. And then when the Zahn books came out, this is pre-internet, going into a Kmart one day with my family, freaking the F out seeing the book. I had no idea it was coming out. And I was just like, I will do a million chores if you buy me this right now. So I've always been a huge Star Wars fan, and I think that was the thing. The Phantom Menace was just this. Now, also to be fair, the drug wore off because the majority of those 10 times, I think the first 5 were all in one weekend. So Jeez. You can judge me there, too. Because it literally was I bought a bunch of tickets. The opening day, I was I literally was that guy. I was that guy who buys the tickets, walks out of the theater, goes to the bathroom, and then walks right back in. Because he got himself an extra large tub of popcorn, and he gets free refills. So why not make the best of the salt and cholesterol death trap than by seeing this film multiple times in one day? So, yeah. That was the issue at the time. And then, like I said, around the eighth or ninth time. I think it was the ninth time, but then there was just some weird nerd number thing where I was like, well, I might as well wrap it up with 10.
I just figured it was over a period of weeks or days, but not like five in one day.
I can pretty much guarantee that I saw it opening day three times. Hmm. Twice in a row, and then later that night I went back with some other friends because they had lives and worked during the day. and then I was just like, yeah, I'll totally go with you. This is awesome. Oh, man, I'm telling you, man, the best character is Jar Jar Binks. Oh, that guy's hysterical. And just such poetry. Are you an angel? That's beautiful. Oh, man, I whip. Boy, Jake Lloyd is going places. So it's just like, I was in the drug haze. I was in the, well, I can't believe it. I mean, honestly, that's the thing about episode 7, is just like, I think episode 7 is going to have that same effect. I do think it's going to be way better and really good. I really do have confidence in it. But even if it isn't, I do think that the majority of people who do see it that opening weekend will walk out going, oh my God, that was amazing! Because it's that weird Star Wars thing, you know, the moment you hear the music.
I saw Phantom Menace in New Zealand, and I guess then I met Leanne, and then we would have seen Attack of the Clones when it was released together.
When we saw Attack of the Clones, I remember liking it a lot more than Phantom Menace. You know the Q-tip head people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know who she's talking about, because she calls on that all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, but I remember, like, in a scene, you know, with the Q-tip people, and, like, I was watching the scene, right, and the Q-tip person's head was just slightly swaying in the breeze the whole time that the scene was going on.
Nice shot.
And I remember being really captivated by that for some reason. And so that's what I mostly remember about Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, yeah. Obi-Wan found out there was a planet that was not in the Jedi archives, and he flew out there and he encountered Boba Fett, and there was a cloning facility, and none of that you remember. All you remember is the Q-tip people.
Yeah.
From that film.
Yeah. Obviously, with the special edition re-releases, the prequel trilogy, Clone Wars, and ongoing video games, books, and comics, there is an active fan base. But why has Star Wars remained so popular with the mainstream after so many years since it first made its cinematic debut?
George Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy took a stab at this question in the last segment of their video interview that was just released on YouTube. They shared what they thought.
It's based on human behavior, human psychology, you know, mythology, which is the sort of archaeology of human behavior and thinking. And since it has those motifs, it is very universal, and everybody can relate to it.
We're used to seeing stories about heroes where it all ends up being great in the end. Well, that isn't necessarily life, and I think that, again, that's what George explored with the dark and light of aspirational ideas.
It's about good and evil in us, as well as our institutions.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally an action-adventure fairy tale set in another galaxy, and that's what I really like about Star Wars, and I think that's why people have clung onto it and it remains so important to a lot of people. You've got the designs, costumes, worlds, ships, etc. They're all iconic. It's exciting and inspirational. The music is unforgettable. The story of the trilogy is simple and compelling. I think it's that simple. It's a solid story with one visual set piece after another that, as an audience, you can't help but come away from it without being affected on some level and wanting to experience it again. And I think, from a fan's point of view, the world is given so much depth that it almost feels real, like a place we want to escape into and become the hero. I think Star Wars is one of the pinnacles of escapism, Tolkien's work being another.
It's something about the characters and the backstory of why I believe in that Star Wars, the character of Luke Skywalker. You know, I know Lucas says that the story is Darth Vader, and yes, overall it is, but yet as a boy, I mean, I just looked up towards Luke Skywalker. You know, when you're a kid, you just instantly relate to him, and as you get older, you shift, and you of course then Han Solo becomes kind of your favorite character. So, but, and again, it's all because of the story overall, the writing and the philosophy, I guess, if you will, you know, for one thing, I guess, for the, you know, the world that he created. So I think that overall is the big reason, and which is why, you know, or at the new trilogy where it's just like, oh, special effects, you know, lights, more lightsabers, more this and that, which that's part of the process, but overall, you know, we enjoyed it for the for the characters.
In the prequels, you couldn't relate to young Anakin in the same way you could with Luke?
No, but I couldn't. But I do also believe, even if some people think it's somewhat, you know, BS reason, is what, you know, what Lucas has said about, oh, well, the prequels were written for, you know, generation for today, as opposed to, you know, the original were written for, you know, meaning like, people who grew up with the original trilogy can't necessarily feel the same way as we did back then, but say our generation who may have had kids, maybe those kids feel the same way about Anakin as we felt about Luke. I personally have never seen it that way, but I will give him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, I was always a fan of Luke, you know, and always wanted to. Yeah, he was my favorite, you know.
So, like, what I was saying was, like, we want to escape into that world and become the hero, and Luke is the hero, Han Solo for other people, but, I mean, Luke is the one that, as a child, you're more likely to relate to. But,
oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Why is Star Wars so much more of a pop culture phenomenon than other big successful movies that we're able to relate to and escape into? What's the extra magic that Star Wars has?
It's like what I said earlier about, you know, I was like 17, 18 when I first saw the movies, and I still really enjoyed them. And I think that, you know, it spans, you know, generations. It's accessible to anyone, really. You know, I mean, it's like what George Lucas was saying in the clip, is that, you know, it deals with good and evil and sort of the same sorts of things you can find in most movies, but the characters are so well developed, and, you know, the whole story has a lot of heart to it. And the setting that it's in, I mean, you've got all of this backstory. And, you know, being in these worlds, like in the cantina, you know, on Tatooine or on Hoth, it kind of makes you want to know more about the, you know, these different civilizations or aliens. I mean, you can create so many things in your head as to, you know, where these guys came from. And, I mean, that adds to it as well. But then you have, you know, Luke. I mean, all of the characters in this are so well done and so... I mean, you can relate to them, you know, like what Kevin said, you know, maybe when you're younger, you can relate more to Luke. And as you get older, you relate more to Han. But then you have romance in it, you know, an empire, and that spans through to Return of the Jedi. One of the things I really liked was seeing how far Luke came as a character and watching that growth of the character, because you see how he starts out, you know, in A New Hope. And then by Return of the Jedi, I mean, he's this badass. You know, I loved the scene when he showed up, you know, in Jabba's palace, and you see what he can do with the Force, what he's learned, and how far he's come. And then you have redemption at the end with Vader. You know, so there's all sorts of things, you know, going on that work so well and are, you know, tied together really well. And I think it's a really well-crafted story and universe.
Well, I think what you touched on probably that's maybe most important there, because, again, there are other movies which have got really good characters, story arcs, and, you know, development and romance and all these similar recipe. But you did mention the depth of that galaxy, the world that George Lucas created, with all these different civilizations and different places and locales that make the place feel like it's actually got a reality to it. That's, I think, what made the Lord of the Rings movie so good, taking from Tolkien's work, because he'd created the entire backstory of the world of Middle-earth. He'd worked all that stuff out. So when he set the adventure in Lord of the Rings at the particular point it was set in, there was so much stuff to reference all the time. There's a history behind everything, and it makes it seem realistic and believable, like it's a real place. There's more to this world than just the story you're experiencing. And with Star Wars, that's kind of the feel it had.
I've got a problem here.
Eject!
I can hold it!
Pull up!
No, I'm all right.
I've heard some people say that, you know, Star Wars isn't really as special as we fans say it is, because we're just fans of it, so we're building it up more. But I do think Star Wars is somewhat timeless. You've got movies like Casablanca, Wizard of Oz, Sound of Music, you know, movies that have been preserved, treated as historically significant in film. And I think Star Wars is exactly one of those. You know, even though it's their 70s haircuts, even though there are still elements which look dated, I don't think it damages the enjoyment of the movie. But then I'm, of course, biased because I grew up with it. But
I mean, I didn't grow up with
exactly.
it. And that's actually one thing that I was worried about before I went in to see the movies. But I didn't notice that at all because, I mean, yeah, maybe you notice the haircuts and stuff at first. But, you know, you get lost in the movie and the characters and stuff. So, I mean, that... I didn't have a problem with it at all. It didn't feel dated to me. And also, I thought the special effects were really good for the time. I mean, yeah, I saw the special editions with the extra stuff, but even watching the originals, I mean, the special effects I thought were great. I really loved the shots of the, you know, the TIE fighters and X-Wings battling each other in space. And I know that they based that a lot on, you know, World War II footage, the fighter planes and things like that. And it was just neat. You don't often see spaceships, you know, filmed in that way, shot in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really neat. I mean, it had action and everything else.
After
you know, I don't see why, it doesn't feel dated to me anyway. And I didn't grow up with it.
You said it was Empire when you really kind of exploded into the fandom stuff, but you were drawn into it as someone who hadn't seen it. You're around 17 years old or so, right?
Yep.
Right, you started collecting the comics.
Yeah.
Didn't you say you got the Crimson Empire Dark Horse
comics? Oh, yeah. Because I worked at a comic store, I was able to read the trades and things that had come out, the comics. So I read a lot of the trades, you know, I'd borrow them from the shop. And then I actually got the Crimson Empire. But it was, you know, I think it was following one character in particular. And I thought that was really neat. And then I got the Star Wars Infinities, kind of like what-if type comics, mm-hmm. which those were cool. So I got into the comics and I started collecting the toys. And I remember I was really excited when I saw Return of the Jedi, this special edition version, because like the first, I don't know how many people in line got these action figures, like these special action figures. And it was called, I remembered it the other night, it was Luke Skywalker Jedi Knight Special Edition Theater Promo is what the figure was called. And so I was all excited because I got one. And I can't remember if my sister went with me to see it or if it was my friend Jen again. But somehow I ended up with two of them because they gave theirs to me. So I had like two of them, like one to open and one to keep in the package. And so, I mean, I got pretty, you know, hardcore into it. And I got Darth Vader's lightsaber and stuff like that. So...
One other interesting thing that's kind of news, which also relates to the enduring popularity, is Chris Lee from Nashville, Tennessee, which rhymes. He's basically purchased an 88-acre plot of land, which will become an educational boot camp, with its main attraction being the full-scale replica of the Falcon, which is at the barest beginnings at the moment. They're building bits and pieces of it. And the idea is, over many, many years, with many fans pitching in and helping out to build this full-size replica, it's going to be the inside and outside of the Falcon all in one. So it's going to be as complete as it can possibly get, short of a working hyperdrive. So I guess it's authentic in that respect, too. The project uses the internet to provide crowdsource funding, and it's based off an intricately designed 3D model of the ship by Stinson Lines from Alabama. And already his contributors from around the world include people from the UK and New Zealand. So a lot of people are involved in it. And I really like what Chris and Stinson said about why they wanted to do this. Here's an excerpt from a BBC interview.
I don't know, from the first time the blockade runner flew over my head and then the seemed like it would never end, Star Destroyer was chasing it, I was hooked. I was like, "This, I got to live in this universe. You know, I got to figure out a way to live in this somehow."
But it goes back to that one scene when Luke sees the Millennium Falcon for the first time and goes, "What a piece of junk." And I think every single fan who sees that says, "Yeah, but it's the coolest piece of junk ever, and I want to build it."
The fact they were inspired to spearhead such a project says a lot about why Star Wars has endured.
I agree. I mean,
that
yeah, absolutely.
Few fans are as ambitious. I mean, I would have loved to have had a speeder bike. That was one of the biggest things that I wanted as a kid, was a speeder bike. I mean, not that I had any scientific knowledge as a kid that would have helped me discover anti-gravity, but I knew from some drawings that they'd done that the speeder bikes and land speeders in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. The way they generated the anti-gravity was with a thing called repulsor coils, something from either the comics or from role-playing Star Wars games, but somehow it had gotten out there and it got into my head, and I was like, oh, maybe they're going to create like a repulsor coil, and then they can really make a speeder bike. And so I sat there and theorized with sketches like how a speeder bike might work so that one day I could have one, you know, to see silly dreams you have as a kid. But
you suddenly pictured your parents
laughing their asses off.
No. Like, you know, what's your mom's name?
Pauline.
Pauline. You're not drawing the speeder bikes, is he? Yes. He's the best for this. What are we going to do? I'm sorry. My humor is stupid sometimes.
The thing is about my family is my dad, really loves Star Wars. I don't think my mom cared too much. I think she appreciated it, you know. But my dad really enjoyed it, and he actually went to see Empire Strikes Back in the theater. And when Return of the Jedi came out, he went and saw that too. And when I found out that he'd been to see it, he went down to London to see Return of the Jedi. I was like, why didn't you take me? I wanted to see it. And I hadn't even seen Empire at that point. But, you know, he really enjoyed the films. He's the one who rented Empire when we got to New Zealand so I could see it, and then Return of the Jedi. Who knows what they were thinking with all the crazy things I was drawing.
I don't know. I think, though, in all seriousness, that funny, the two topics that we've been talking about are really, really intertwined, you know, about the popularity and the memories of, you know, it's just there's something in this universe that Lucas created that's just, you know, touches a majority of us. And some do a hilarious webcomic to express it. Others have bought a ton of land to build a life-size replica of a Millennium Falcon. And might I say, and I'm not, and again, I think it's a cool idea, but let's just think about how, I think overall, how much Star Wars is in our psyche, because I think that's cool. Whereas if somebody else came up to me and goes, I bought a ton of land and I'm going to build me a spaceship, you'd be like, I'm calling the police because there's something wrong. But there's something where you're like, well, I want to make a educational, but yes, that makes perfect sense. But that is, that's just how Star Wars is now. It's kudos to them, and hopefully they'll find the rest of the funding. And I know, you know, I'd be excited to see something like that. Yeah, I mean, we grew up in, I grew up in Leanne, you know, in the D.C. area with Air and Space Museum. Go through those old planes and such, and you know, say if you've been to, like, Navy ships, you know, same thing where you get to walk through. That's in itself a really cool experience. If you can tell me in, like, 10 years from now, I can travel down and walk the Millennium Falcon, yes, I would like to do that.
Well, so, they may even do that now that Disney will be making probably more theme park attractions in the future for Star Wars. I don't think it's going to be as thorough as what the fans are planning to make. I'm sure it will be a little bit, you know, simplified to save money and won't have as much love and care going into every little detail. But, yeah, there could be those kinds of experiences in the future for us to, go see an actual, you know, the Millennium Falcon. Well, one other thing I wanted to say, though, was that, yes, definitely we have to be appreciative of what George Lucas created, because it did come from his imagination. He pushed it and must have been a really hard sell to the movie executives. But we also need to thank Ralph McQuarrie, John Williams, ILM, the Stormtrooper design, what they look like, the Darth Vader, the costumes, the spaceships, the effects, the music. So much that went into those movies that enhanced George Lucas's original vision. All those people contributed to making this a lasting pop culture phenomenon.
Absolutely.
The Death Star has cleared the planet. The Death Star has cleared the planet.
Rebel base in range.
You may fire when ready.
So, thank you very much for joining us. You've been listening to Blue Milk Special. Music by Roscoe Lewis, and you can find more of his work at day3creations.co.uk. information about Blue Milk Special, you can go to bluemilkspecial.com